Our host, Alex Zane, speaks from a Star Wars convention.
In 1977, a science fiction space opera came along that took the world by storm. In nearly 40 years, seven movies have quite literally changed the way films are made. They've given birth to generations of the most dedicated fans in the world, and they've provided us with movie moments that will last forever. Because there's everything else, and then there's Star Wars.
Various shots of Star Wars artifacts are displayed in space. The face of Darth Maul is reflected in the window hatch. An Imperial Walker, a Stormtrooper helmet, the squat figure of R2-D2 rotates into the frame. Finally, Darth Vader's black mask comes to face out, overlaid by the Star Wars logo.
I've come to Star Wars Celebration Europe to reveal the results of Sky Cinema's exclusive poll to discover the greatest moments from the greatest movie franchise of all time.
I talk about Star Wars as if it's really happened a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
When I was a child, I seen A New Hope for the first time, and it just blew us away.
The opening, like, Star Wars, bam, 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 like music, and the call.
It's got to be one of the lightsaber fights.
Luke and Vader's lightsaber fight on Cloud City. That's just, it's just so unique.
The final fight between Vader and Luke in the Emperor's throne on Death Star.
I'm a Samuel L. Jackson fan, so it was the fight with the Emperor.
Handshot first.
Obi-Wan left Anakin to die. I think this is one that would give me the most chills.
I love you, I know, with Han and Luke. Han and Leia.
Anything with Jar Jar Binks, isn't it?
When the X-Wings arrive over the lake and Seven, that one's by far my favourite.
Good choice.
And Exodus Paul, last X-Wing is last attack.
Leia in a golden bikini.
Which didn't happen
yet.
The Battle of Hoth, it's just amazing.
Every time it starts snowing, I get the feeling like I need to watch Empire Strikes Back. Like, it's like almost a seasonal thing when, you know, like you get in a Christmas mood, so we get in a like a Empire Strikes Back mood.
I can't pick. There's no way you can pick a best bit.
The Star Wars is my life, my whole life.
I don't have a favorite, I love them all.
Well, that is what the fans here at Star Wars Celebration think, but will our countdown agree? Just to make things interesting, I locked everyone at Sky Cinema in the Death Star trash compactor and gave them the time until the walls closed to come up with their definitive list of the top 20 classic moments from the entire Star Wars universe.
This is where the fun begins.
One moment?
No one had seen anything like this.
It was just huge fun.
That was the coolest, coolest thing.
Everyone's like, oh my gosh.
What you feel like when you feel great is you want to feel like Han Solo winking at Princess Leia at the end of Star Wars.
That's a moment that stands out for me.
When they're all in the trash compactor, the eyeball comes up. I think that was a big moment.
There is another.
This was an amazing moment.
Han Solo says,
it's not wise to upset a Wookiee.
But sir,
nobody wonders about upsetting a droid.
It's because a droid don't pull people's arms out of their sockets when they lose.
Let the Wookiee win.
That's too funny, man.
Hey, come on.
That's hysterical.
Here we go.
One, two, three!
It's not fair.
That's Star Wars to me, you know, those images.
It's a wonderful thing to watch.
People were blown away.
Everything about it was astonishing.
Wow.
That changed everything.
That was the beginning of where we are now. We're not here now without those films.
The rest is Star Wars history.
Star Wars Greatest Moments, voiced by Aaron Winkle.
So those are just some of the amazing moments from the Star Wars universe that have thrilled us all. And you know what? Not a single one of them has made it into our top 20. These are quite literally the very best of the very best, as collated by everyone at Sky Cinema. And I have to say, right now, this list contains spoilers for all 7 Star Wars movies, including some absolutely massive ones for The Force Awakens. So, now that we've all been warned, let's jump to light speed and kick off our countdown by royal decree.
Number 20.
One of the things that is not traditional about A New Hope and the original trilogy is Leia. She's been captured by the bad guys, this evil guy's torturing her. She's at the heart of the biggest castle in the galaxy. But she is not a damsel in distress.
A scene from Star Wars: A New Hope.
Luke comes in to rescue Leia, and her immediate reaction is to pick holes in him.
Aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper?
Huh? Oh, the uniform. I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm here to rescue you.
It's a lovely little passage in the film where she takes charge.
I can't hold off forever. Now what?
This is some rescue. You came in here. Did you have a plan for getting out?
He's the brain, sweetheart.
She snatches a blaster, blows a hole in the wall, and starts trying to get them to safety.
What the hell are you doing?
Somebody has to save our skins. Into the garbage, fly boy.
And you've immediately got this tension and this kind of slight butting of heads between her and Han.
Wonderful girl! Either I'm gonna kill her or I'm beginning to like her!
She is very capable and very together and very funny. You know, I mean, everyone who's met Carrie Fisher knows she's an absolute natural wit.
I don't know who you are or where you came from, but from now on, you do as I tell you, okay?
Look, your worshipfulness, let's get one thing straight. I take orders from just one person, me.
It's a wonder you're still alive. Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?
No reward is worth this.
She's everything you'd want a female hero to be today, and yet she was arriving in 1977.
You came in that thing? You're braver than I thought.
Nice, come on.
You know, there's, of course, aspirative nature to watching that story. You know, you immediately put yourself into it. We did as kids, and we still do as adults. Like, I'm more Luke. I'm more Han. I'm more of a Leia. I always felt like I was more of a Leia. I didn't share that with the kids because they would have said funny things back in the 70s, but I'm okay to say it now. Yeah, I felt like more of a Leia. Sometimes I'm cold. And I like to wear my hair funny.
And during the thrilling rebel escape from the Death Star, one of our favorite moments swings our top 20 into action.
I think we took a wrong turn.
They close a door to hold off advancing stormtroopers.
They close the door, and you're like, okay, now they're, what are they gonna do? They're screwed. But then he sees another set of stormtroopers up in the corner, and they're starting to shoot at him. The door starts to open. Uh-oh.
Here they come!
It just keeps getting more and more complicated for him.
Here, hold this.
He gives the gun to Leia, and you realize Leia, like, is kind of a badass with a laser. And they come together and they swing across and you feel that thrill of flight for a moment.
Good luck.
They perform a death-defying swing over a chasm.
It's a great traditional classic action beat that is as old as cinema. It's as old as movies.
Number 19.
Almost 30 years after Star Wars fans first experienced Darth Vader on the big screen, they got the chance to see how he came to be. Released in 2005, Revenge of the Sith completed the circle of life, death, and rebirth of Anakin Skywalker.
I'm sitting through episode 3, and I was waiting for the moment for Anakin to turn. And then there are all the little kids that are trained to be Jedis.
Master Skywalker, there are too many of them. What are we going to do?
And he walks in and they look at him and just go... Bzzz. And I go, whoa, they went there.
And then they cut away. And kids didn't understand, but everyone else was like, oh, wow. He just slaughtered all the children that were training to be Jedis. What I loved about it was they fully committed to him turning to the dark side. That when Anakin does that, you're like, yeah, he's earned the mask.
The epic showdown between Master and Apprentice at the end of Episode 3 seals the fate of Anakin Skywalker.
This is the end for you, my master.
And gives rise to one of the most iconic characters in cinema history.
Anakin and Obi-Wan duel with their lightsabers.
We've spent basically three films watching this young boy become a young man, become a Jedi, and then kind of fall away from the Jedi path to the extent that his old mentor is the one who cuts him down, literally cuts him down, literally, you know, tears him limb from limb.
You underestimate my power!
Don't try it!
And it's a kind of a ruin of a man who is picked up by the Emperor and then transformed into Darth Vader. It's a culmination of these entire three films when you see the mask lowered onto his burned head and the breathing start.
Darth Vader lies motionless as the final piece of his helmet is assembled.
It's one of those moments where the whole cinema gets a little bit of a shiver down their back, because this, finally, is the Darth Vader that we know and fear.
Vader's body is dramatically risen. Rick McCallum speaks.
It was close to the very end of the shooting. It was a very emotional experience to make the film. It was an incredible day because it wasn't on the call sheet. Only the crew, basic crew, knew. But suddenly, while I was driving up with Hayden, there were just literally hundreds and hundreds of people from the studio. And they were kind of waiting outside the stage, so we brought everybody in. There wasn't a single sound you could hear in there. It was breathtaking. It was a really monumental moment. One of my favorite moments of ever being on a set.
Number 18. Chewie and Han Solo emerge from trees and sneak up on an unsuspecting stormtrooper, but a twig snaps under Han's foot. The stormtrooper punches him down and races off.
Go for help, go!
Star Wars is full of these incredibly powerful, exciting visual moments of chasing in various locations. Chasing through the forest at high speed is an incredibly exciting visual thing, I think, and it was just a kind of yet another way that the Star Wars film showed us something we'd never really seen before.
Quick, jam their conlink, center switch!
The speeder bike chase is astounding. It's one of the first uses of Steadicam. They were trying to figure out how you make a chase through the woods at 100 miles per hour safely.
Speed camera.
And that's not easy to do. And so they got the Steadicam thing and they walked through the woods and then sped up the footage. What a smart move.
The speeder bike sequence is astonishing. It's the kind of sequence that I wonder today if they could actually pull it off.
We'd never seen the bikes like that before. You know, it was just amazing. You know, and the way they would...
Get alongside that one.
The sound, the way they shot it, the speed of it, the editing, it was just a great ride.
You do get a sense all the way through that these people are going to get their heads knocked off at any minute. You are actually...
would be like one of those hapless stormtroopers, there's no question.
The one stormtrooper, like, hits the tree. Then they took the guy out, and like, back.
It's just exciting. I think that's what Star Wars does so well. It's exciting.
So, as our number 18 moment speeds through the forests of Endor, it's time for us to take a break, but don't go anywhere because there'll be more from Star Wars' greatest moments very soon.
I love sci-fi.
Me too.
Really?
What do you like about it?
I like it because it's in space. JJ.
No, we're both children of the 1970s, and obviously there was a seismic event in the mid-70s when Star Wars hit for the first time. It utterly changed so much. I mean, it changed society, let alone cinema. I remember just being, I mean, just blown away by it, you know, and kind of coming out of the movie theater with a poster rolled up, going...
It was crazy. It's funny, I remember seeing in a magazine about 6 months before the movie came out, I remember seeing Star Wars, and it was the logo, and I remember saying aloud, Star Wars. It was unusual, and I remember feeling like that was, you know, odd. I didn't know Star Wars, and it's so strange to remember before it was something that we're just born knowing about, and now it's just Star Wars. Where, you know, the history of it, the tone of it, the approach of it, the feel, the themes of it feel incredibly different to me.
Are you doing Star Wars now?
Oh, you didn't know? Simon Pegg was in trouble.
End of part one. Part two.
Welcome back to Star Wars Greatest Moments, where we're going to jump straight back into our countdown with our first look at The Force Awakens and a brand new character that's become an instant fan favorite. With spoilers aplenty, the Force is definitely strong in this one.
Number 17, Daisy Ridley.
For me, this is the first film I've done, full stop. So I'm like, oh, this is really cool.
A new beginning for Star Wars with The Force Awakens also brought with it a new hope for the Star Wars universe in the form of a brand new character with an irresistible connection to the saga's past.
We start off, as we did in A New Hope with Luke Skywalker, as being an innocent kind of farm boy. We have Rey.
Rey is a very gritty character. She has to work so hard for her own survival. The reason she's so relatable is because she comes from a hard life. She comes from a place where she's had to get by on her own a lot. She was more or less an orphan. She's just had to be very strong to survive on her own. And so when this incredible adventure comes into her life, she's ready to do it. And I think that's very relatable and very exciting for people and inspiring.
It feels amazing to play someone that hopefully people can identify with, and younger women who maybe don't have that in cinema yet. Can look up to.
Rey's defining moment, so far at least, comes as part of the epic standoff between good and most definitely evil at the end of The Force Awakens. And in the classic Star Wars tradition, it's at the point where all seems lost that our heroes find the strength to battle on.
The lightsaber's flown into the snow.
We see Kylo just go for a force grab. And the next shot is the lightsaber juddering.
And it's shaking, he's shaking.
And you think, oh my God, this is it, it's all over. And sure enough, the lightsaber lifts up, as we've seen before in the films, and shoots across the screen.
Then it flies past him. He can't even reach out and grab it because it's going with this incredible force to Rey.
The lightsaber soars into the outstretched hand of a stunned Rey.
It's this incredible moment where Rey realizes, and the audience realizes all at the same time, that she has this immense power. The way the scene plays is she's got this incredible vulnerability and this kind of disbelief about it, but she's also got this incredible power, so she's kind of shaking.
It's such a defining moment of the film. It's such an incredible moment for Rey, who it seems like she might have just stumbled upon this whole thing by mistake. Until that moment, and you realise, no, this is her story.
It's a fantastic moment. It's engineered to be a fantastic moment, but it would not have the resonance that it does if we had not already fallen for this character, really understood her. If all those elements that led up to that moment weren't perfect, that moment may have fallen flat, and it certainly did not. You just understand that we've just seen a pivotal turning point in a galactic storyline right at that moment.
Number 16.
I really love the Ewoks.
I'm down with the Ewoks.
One of a trio of good versus evil standoffs that take place at the end of Return of the Jedi, the Battle of Endor brings the forces of the Empire face to face with the cutest indigenous race they've ever come up against.
I got Ewoks at the right age. I was like 11, and I just thought they were the coolest thing.
Endor, you know, it's very welcoming and seems unthreatening, and I think that's what
is the Empire's downfall. That was a great sequence to shoot as well. I mean, very exciting for me to get to fight stormtroopers. You know, nowadays, kids of 11 get to do it in a virtual way on a computer game, but I was doing it for real. You know, I was throwing rocks, albeit rubber rocks, at stormtroopers. One of my favourite moments was the moment when the chicken walker, or AT-ST, was walking along and then the logs roll down the hill and it can't get its footing anymore and falls over. It's just fantastic. And the other moment when the walker's head is crushed between two swinging logs. It's just fabulous.
I thought that the Battle of Endor was very satisfying, the idea that the indigenous population was going to pitch in and help this time with the destruction of the new Death Star.
Ewoks are a metaphor, man, for like low-tech versus high-tech. It was him doing his statement on the Vietnam War. It's like the Empire is clearly outgunning every one of these little bears, but with rocks and a lot of true grit, they literally take down the Empire.
Number 15.
The one that comes to mind is the binary sunset moment where Luke Skywalker is looking out at the sunset.
Luke comes out and the two suns are kind of setting and this theme starts playing. That's why I kept humming to myself.
It swells into this very deep, melancholy but hopeful theme, describing the sea of emotion inside Luke Skywalker. It's really cool.
That crystallized an extraordinary photographic idea of what it's like for all boys, girls, anyone, you know, about to leave home, yearning desperately for the adventure of life.
It tells you everything you need to know about Luke. He dreams of something bigger. He's not where he needs to be. He's more than this.
Somehow that moment, that young man, the image of the twin sons, the story that it's telling is like, this is his last moment of peace. This is the beginning of something epic.
It was that power of what was possible on the horizon beyond those two suns that encapsulated all of what Star Wars meant to me as a kid, and certainly was something that we tried to infuse in The Force Awakens.
Number 14, Alex Zane sits next to a waxwork of Han Solo.
From the very first moment, audiences caught a glimpse of Han Solo on screen, the character was catapulted to iconic status. To say he made an immediate impression on us all would be an understatement. To say he made an immediate impression on Greedo, well, that's something else altogether.
Going somewhere, Solo?
Yes, Greedo. As a matter of fact, I was just going to see your boss. Tell Jabba that I've got his money.
There's something so macho about Harrison Ford in this. When he shoots Greedo, in the seconds before, he's got his feet up on the table, he's leaned back, he's like the picture of cocky. He's the picture of masculine cowboy.
You know, it's classic Western stuff. It's like, you know, John Wayne would have done something like that, you know?
Greedo, holding Han at gunpoint, says, Jabba's put a price on your head so large every bounty hunter in the galaxy will be looking for you. I'm lucky I found you first.
Yeah, but this time I've got the money.
He's this figure we kind of know, but transplanted to this surreal setting where he's sitting across the seahorse man. And Harrison Ford almost looks like he's in a completely different movie, but he's owning that. He's owning his whole moment.
If you give it to me, I might forget I found you.
I don't have it with me.
In some ways, it's like James Bond. You know, he's a nice guy, but he's supposed to be ruthless. I don't think Han has got as far as he has without being a little bit ruthless. And not taking any chances.
Even I get bored sometimes. Do you think I had a choice?
You can tell that to Jabba. He may only take your ship.
Over my dead body.
It's one of those moments where people are like, well, you know, he's a guy who is, he's taking him out. Should we feel good about this guy? But he did it in such a cool way. He was just like, yeah, you know, I was just coming to see you, Greedo. You know, everything's fine.
Because everyone wants to be that cool guy that's just like, you think you got me, but actually, I got you. Boom.
Han shoots Greedo to the surprise of several space creatures in the bar.
You watched a man destroy another man, even though he was from another planet, an alien and whatnot, and then walk up to the bartender, give him what looked like a quarter, and say, for the mess.
Sorry about the mess.
That's how you deal with it. Shoot first, give somebody a quarter, move on. So age 7, I'm sitting there going, that's who I want to be when I grow up. And of course, your parents are like, that guy? But you're like, yes, that's amazing.
So it's bye-bye to Greedo and bye-bye from me for just a moment. But don't go anywhere, because Star Wars Greatest Moments continues very soon.
Hugh Jackman.
You know the main thing I remember was the guns, the laser guns. I was like, this is incredible. When I was play acting afterwards, I was like, oh, how do we make this real? Of course, I love the ending. I love Han Solo. To me, Han Solo was just sensational. I love everything about it. I loved.
End of part 2. Part 3.
Welcome back to Star Wars Greatest Moments, and as we continue our epic quest to find Sky Cinema's favourite, it's time to return to our countdown to find out if number 13 will prove unlucky. Spoiler alert, yes. Yes, it will.
Number 13, Edith Bowman speaks.
When I saw the films for the first time and I was little, I was a Luke girl. I was on Team Luke. But then as I've got older, I'm definitely on Team Han.
Blast them.
Get back to the chair, you go! Get back!
He certainly has courage.
Good will it do us if he gets himself killed. Come on.
That humor, that confidence is something that I think all of us admire. I mean, who doesn't want to be Han Solo? I think more people want to be Han Solo than want to be Luke Skywalker, let's be honest.
Chewbacca and Han Solo flee from a whole regiment of stormtroopers.
The amazing thing about Han Solo is his whole attitude is like, I'm not really into this movie, you know? Like, I don't really care about the Jedi, I don't care about the Rebellion, I don't care about the Empire.
He just wanted to make the drop-off, deliver what he had to deliver in the Millennium Falcon, and go on his way and pay off his debt.
We're literally talking about the fate of the galaxy. The character that we care about the most, or is kind of the most entertaining, is one who cares only about himself.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
You know, you think of Han Solo, and I mean, I just think of Harrison Ford. I just think they are the same person, which was probably why I embarrassed myself when I interviewed him for the first time.
Hey, it's me.
My favorite moment is in A New Hope. Han and Luke and Chewie go to rescue Leia. Harrison does a hilarious business where he's trying to explain and making excuses.
Everything's under control, situation normal.
What happened?
Had a slight weapons malfunction, but everything's perfectly all right now. We're fine, we're all fine here now, thank you. How are you?
Finally, the guys upstairs say,
who is this? What's your operating number?
Han gets fed up and he just shoots the comm link.
Conversation anyway.
That's my favorite moment in all of Star Wars.
To me, there's not that much difference between them. You know, Harrison's very quiet, very cool, very calm. He's a presence, and that's what you feel from Han Solo. When he walks into the room, everybody turns their head and takes notice.
I got an idea.
Harrison Ford in real life, if you meet him, is an incredibly cool person. He's dripping in that effortlessness and that cynicism, which of course is the key to Han Solo, really.
I can do any thing I want. I used to be Harrison Ford.
In plotting the continuation of the Star Wars saga with Episode 7, the makers of The Force Awakens knew that bringing back the central trio from the original trilogy was an essential part of giving the new movie a sense of legitimacy with fans. And it's something that clearly excited those involved every bit as much.
I think everything had kind of been building up to a moment of one of the originals stepping back onto one of the real spaceships. When Harrison stepped onto the Millennium Falcon, it was like, oh my God. And then obviously because he does the...
Chewie, we're home.
Oh, there it is.
So much of Han Solo had changed, but he was still the same kind of space pirate.
Han shoots several stormtroopers.
It started in A New Hope and throughout the original trilogy as being this kind of cynical kind of buccaneer. He called the Force mumbo-jumbo. but so much had passed that not only did he believe about the Force, but he kind of respected it now as well.
It's all true.
Han, the character who least believed in Obi-Wan Kenobi in Episode 4, has now become the Obi-Wan Kenobi of that movie.
The Force Awakens gives audiences an older, wiser, deeper Han Solo, a character we could all fall back in love with, but also one whose off-screen journey from swashbuckler to anguished father could become the emotional centerpiece to the story and provide the emotional crescendo to the film itself.
It becomes a very small story. It's not about the Force, it's not about the Resistance. It's about a father trying to get his son back. And it starts off, you know, with him shouting, Ben!
What I liked about it is that it was inevitable. You know, he couldn't turn his back on his son. He had to walk on that bridge.
The second he steps onto that catwalk, it kind of became like, oh, this is this moment.
And any time that someone walks on a big bridge over a chasm, someone's going down in there.
There's only a few ways this could end, and there's only one way I can imagine it ending that makes sense in the context of the story.
Take off that mask. You don't need it.
What do you think you'll see if I do?
The face of my son.
Nothing else mattered to Han Solo in that moment other than taking Ben back to his mum. And it doesn't get any more touching than that.
I'm being torn apart. I want to be free of this pain. I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I have the strength to do it. Can you help me?
Yes, anything.
And then Kylo Ren gets out his lightsaber. You think he's going to pass it over. Han Solo is going to be able to persuade him to come over to the light. I wasn't expecting that to happen. I thought, what a wonderful moment.
You know, there's so many kind of signs as what's happening. The light disappears. He actually steps out from the light and walks into the dark as he makes his decision. But ultimately, it's a really sad moment where a dad realizes that he's lost.
Kylo Ren impales Han Solo with his lightsaber.
It's a dark moment. It's, you know, we thought very hard, how would audiences react to seeing a beloved hero killed off? But I think because it thematically fits into what Star Wars essentially is, which is that there's light and there's dark.
Thank you.
And one is defined by the existence of the other. And so although it was a bold kind of story decision, I think it's true to what Star Wars is.
A dying hand tenderly strokes his son's emotionless face before plummeting into the chasm below.
The dirty secret is that you're not representing who you are. You're representing an idea of a person. And the unique opportunity is not to make them believe that you are the character, but to make them believe that they are up there. You have the opportunity to be their emotional representative on screen. Big, well lit. It's fun.
Number 12, Eli Roth.
Of all the things I thought I was going to feel, of all the emotions I thought I was going to feel going to see Return of the Jedi, it's like excitement, exhilaration, Star Wars, the action adventure, that kind of adrenaline roller coaster. Of all the emotions I thought I was going to feel, I did not anticipate that, like, complete and utter horniness would be one of them.
No, it's not Jabba we're talking about here. Instead, it's the eye-popping costume worn by Princess Leia while a prisoner in Jabba's throne room after the failed attempt to rescue Han Solo. It's instantly recognizable, utterly iconic, and just a little bit controversial.
When I was a kid, I don't think I understood why Leia was in a bikini with a chain around her neck. I just thought, oh, her hair's really pretty. And then when you get older and you start looking closely at Jabba's disgusting lips and seeing her kneeling at the feet, and you start to be able to understand what's really going on, the subtext that they don't quite spell out in the film, it's terrifying.
I really am feeling things for Princess Leia I didn't know were inside of me. You love Princess Leia, but she's like family at this point. And then you're seeing her in the gold bikini, and it's really screwing with your head.
You will bring Captain Solo and the Wookiee to me.
Whether you love it or hate it, there's no denying the cultural impact the palace costume made. But there's also no denying how effectively Leia uses that costume in the context of the movie, in a way that perfectly illustrates the character we'd come to know and love.
While it might seem like simple fanboy titillation, Leia's outfit in Jabba's palace actually turns out to be the means to both hers and the Rebels' escape.
I always saw, and I read that movie, as she was not his prisoner. She was waiting for the go code, man. As soon as my man is like, here's our plan A. I'm coming in as Boash, and I'm going to get Han out of here. And when that didn't work, she's like, here's plan B. Luke's going to come in, and then we trigger everything. I'm going to kill this space lizard.
She uses the fact that she's incarcerated almost within this costume and chained up to fight against the person that's incarcerated her.
She chokes Jabba to death. How amazing is that?
The force that you see her use to bring him to his end is brilliant.
So savage, dude. Like this, you know, she's the princess and she chokes this thing to death. Jabba never lives again after that. He's not lightsabered or blasted. Nobody, she's just like her father. Remember Darth Vader choked that other guy on the Death Star? She's like, it's in the blood, and she chokes that thing to death. It's nuts.
Number 11.
Despite the groundbreaking, Oscar-winning visual effects of A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back, it was Return of the Jedi that gave the magicians at Industrial Light and Magic the opportunity to give the audience something even more exciting than they'd seen before.
It's interesting that by the time Jedi came out, we were 6 years after Star Wars, and the advances in technology were enough that the special effects do seem to have advanced a lot. So by the time they're attacking the unfinished Death Star, it does look even more visually dazzling than it did back in Star Wars.
What Industrial Light and Magic were doing with the effect shots, they weren't just creating shots. I mean, they were creating beautiful frames.
Watch yourself, Wedge. Three from above.
Red three, red two, pull in.
Got it.
The Jedi space battle stuff is some of the most fun that I had. The more ships you have, the more pieces of film have to go through an optical printer to create the finished shot. It can get insane.
It was arduous. I used to call it photomasochism.
It can be very short, but it can take days. There's a shot that's been pointed out before. The only reason I remember this is because people have brought it up to me. It's called SB19. It's only like 20 or 22 frames long, but it's got, at the time, more single elements in it than any shot prior to that.
Fighters coming in.
My fault.
The improvisation that they had to have at old ILM in terms of figuring out how they're going to do these things that had never been done. These guys were insane for even attempting these things.
And within the epic space battle at the end of Return of the Jedi is a single line of dialogue that has become a huge fan favorite and made it to number 11 on our countdown.
Admiral Ackbar is like a liability when it comes to morale. So you have a bunch of rebel pilots who have now been fighting against the Empire for several years. And then here, in the middle of all this stuff...
May the Force be with us.
Some weird, unexpected contacts show up in the sensors.
All craft, pull up!
And then they hear the voice of their commanding officer, Admiral Ackbar.
Take a base of action. Green group, stay close to holding sector and each other.
Admiral, we have enemy ships in Sector 47.
It's a trap!
Everyone starts panicking because he didn't keep his cool. They would have done so much better in that battle if Ackbar was like,
everyone, really, it might be a trap, but don't worry about it. We got this.
And you'd be like, oh,
Well, that's the Empire. They do this kind of thing. But when you hear over the comlink the guy that you're counting on for your game plan to be like, oh my God, it's a trap! And you're like, okay, well, we're dead.
It's a trap!
That's like become like, oh, you meet someone on Tinder, you meet them in person, they look very different. It's a trap. When you're on a date with someone and they don't exactly match their Tinder profile, you just go, it's a trap. I'm married, so it doesn't apply to me anymore. That's what I hear.
Admiral Akbar and the Rebel Force are trapped just outside our top 10. And we have reached the halfway point in our countdown of Star Wars greatest moments. But don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a moment.
John Boyega.
I remember a moment just standing on set, and one of the prop guys came out, and he had this black box. And he opened the box and he goes, John, yeah, can you pick up the lightsaber? I just went like this. You know that moment where the dove kind of just flies out of the sky and there's just, you know, sun rays and, you know, eagles and stuff and smoke. I don't know what it was, but I felt so epic. And if you look around, the whole cast and crew were just like this.
He impersonates an awestruck expression.
Can I hold it? Can I hold the saber? And I'm just standing there just like, yes. It gave me such power. Then I realized I was in a Star Wars movie. Because I had a saber in my hand.
End of part three. Part four.
Welcome back to Star Wars Greatest Moments, where we are halfway through our universe-hopping quest. But before we launch into the top 10, and once again, with spoilers, here is our countdown so far. At number 20, Luke and Leia swing into action. And we're breathing life into Darth Vader at 19. Speed is of the essence at 18, while Rey forces her way into the countdown at 17. The Ewoks are bearing up well in the number 16 slot, leaving Luke staring into space at 15. 14 sees the end of Greedo, and it's the end of Han at 13. Leia reaches the gold standard at 12, and there's a trap set for the Rebels at 11. And now the saga continues as we enter our top 10 greatest moments in the history of Star Wars, as voted for by Sky Cinema. And at number 10, a Jedi Master flexes his muscles.
Number 10, Yoda summons his lightsaber and is set upon by the dastardly Count Dooku.
As both Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith proved, for a seemingly fragile near 900-year-old, Yoda can still hold his own when it comes to the fisticuffs. But when we first met him chronologically in The Empire Strikes Back, Yoda had long since put down the lightsaber for the calming and picturesque surroundings of the Dagobah system. It's here that Luke receives his training courtesy of the Star Wars universe's ultimate master. And we, as an audience, learn that becoming a Jedi is as much about training the mind as it is about training the body. Although that helps too.
When I saw that as a kid, I wanted to get into martial arts for real and do classes and do gymnastics, learn how to use the Force. And then one day when I'm a dad, I can have my kids on my back and be able to do a front somersault. You know, I found out the hard way that's not possible.
My lasting memories from those scenes on Dagobah are Yoda being in the backpack and Luke kind of training, you know, doing his Jedi training, but also when you're suddenly faced with this power that this little thing has.
I'm not afraid.
Yeah. You will be.
You will be.
That was my favorite line.
You will be.
Luke has been inclined to see himself as a bit special since the end of A New Hope. He's the guy who has the Force. He's the guy who can do stuff. And yet he comes here and is instantly and very thoroughly put in his place by this tiny little dude with the big ears who can do incredible things that Luke can't even dream of at that point.
All right, I'll give it a try.
No, try not. Do or do not. There is no try.
Luke focuses his powers and extends his right hand.
That that moment, lifting the X-Wing out of the swamp, not only shows Luke that he has a lot to learn in terms of his faith and his self-belief in terms of using the Force, he also has a lot to learn just in life, generally, about using the Force.
Luke is like the ultimate emo teenager. Everybody tries to lift the X-Wing out of the swamp and he can't. Like, he just walks over to the corner and he flops down like he's a comic book character.
Up until that point, you've really only seen Obi-Wan and Darth Vader. And they're like, okay, the old Jedis. And then here's the Master Jedi, the last living one. And it's the first time you really get to see his powers. When Yoda lifts the X-Wing out of the swamp and shows that it doesn't matter how small you are, how frail you are, that it's the power of the Force that you need to channel, that's the most incredible moment, because that's the only time Yoda's flexing his muscles.
You're suddenly going, oh, all right, he's not messing. He knows what he's talking about.
And you're just like, wow, that is what a badass Jedi can do.
Yoda's just like this wrinkly old raisin. He's a soft grape. Everybody thinks he's a soft grape. Right? And he just comes out of nowhere and he just lifts this thing, brings it over, and it just like presents it to him. There you are. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I don't believe it.
That is why you fail.
Little dude like that, soft grape, lifting the X-Wing. Gotta love that.
Number 9.
You kind of say, what are the elements that make Star Wars what it is? And you just go, well, lightsabers. And everybody go, yeah, that's it, isn't it?
Why are lightsabers cool?
Everything is cool about lightsabers.
I've been looking forward to this.
I mean, why is the grass green? Why are lightsabers cool? They're the coolest thing there is.
Do I have one? I have 3.
It's just got everything. Handy to store, easy to carry. Who doesn't want one?
Everyone can try and mimic that sound. I mean,
anyone who's kind of grown up with Star Wars, that wow, it's just part of the kind of, you're just straight there as soon as you hear it.
When you get great characters you care about using these cool weapons to fight each other, it's really, really thrilling and exciting.
Luke watches on as Obi-Wan squares up to Darth Vader, but then drops his guard, allowing the villain to cut him down.
Unlike swords, you can see them in the dark. So you can have scenes like in Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back where Vader's standing there in silhouette and then suddenly the red lightsaber just, you know, and it can illuminate their faces and it can shine on their armor.
Brave of you, boy. I would have thought you had learned your lesson.
I am a slow learner.
Anakin uses 2 lightsabers to fight Count Dooku.
Wonderful scene at the end of Attack of the Clones where Count Dooku is facing Anakin, which I think is almost Lucas returning to the experimental art cinema that he used to like and indeed used to make that kind of film as a film student in the 1960s. For a couple of minutes there, all you see is red and blue light and reflections on people's faces. So, it becomes very, very abstract. It's just about patterns and colour. If you took those minutes out, there could be an art installation almost.
The lightsaber battles have been the high points of the Star Wars movies from the very beginning. But for the one you voted the 9th greatest Star Wars moment of all time, we're going back to episode 1 for a lightsaber battle that managed to double our pleasure.
Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan come face to face with the sinister Darth Maul.
We'll handle this.
We'll take the long way. You know what a lightsaber looks like. You think you know what's going to happen here. And then... it turns out it's a double-ended lightsaber, and he can take on both of them at once. It's one of those things that makes a geeky little heart just burst with happiness.
We had a great stunt coordinator, Nick Gillard, and he had found this young guy who was a martial arts expert.
Before this, I was stacking shelves at Sainsbury's and Tesco's and teaching gymnastics and martial arts. So I was really excited to go in and maybe get a job doing stunts for Star Wars.
We were rehearsing with him, and he would switch the lightsaber around every once in a while. And all of us just kind of looked at each other, and George said, well, why don't we have a double-sided lightsaber? And then that was the moment we knew, hey, we were going to have something special.
Maul didn't use any force. He was all about, you know, battling and fighting. So George had written this in for me to use the force. I said, imagine that droid over there. You're going to use that droid and open those doors behind you. So I sort of channeled my inner dad, because I thought, what would my dad do? Well, how would he do this? And so I pointed those two fingers, my Disney fingers, pointed them, and I opened the door. That was my moment, you know, it was my proud moment using the Force.
Darth Maul wields his double lightsaber expertly to fight the two Jedis.
Phantom Menace has a phenomenal lightsaber battle between Ben Kenobi, Qui-Gon Jinn, and Darth Maul. One of the coolest moments in the entire Star Wars saga, I don't care if anybody's like, Phantom Menace, you're a jerk, comes right out of that movie. Darth Maul fighting Qui-Gon in that hallway with the with the electric power field. It is fantastic as they get trapped between power fields, waiting for it to unphase so it can open the hallway so they can go at the battle again. Qui-Gon goes into like a repose, like kind of meditative position on the ground, and Darth Maul stalks the wall like an animal.
When Liam went into his lotus position, I didn't hear cut, and so I slid down into splits. And I think in the back of my mind, I always wanted to do a Van Damme split or a Van Damme kick in this fight. If I did it by accident, no, I get told off once, but I won't do it again, but if they have it. And so I slid down into box splits really slowly, just staring at Qui-Gon, and then George said, cut. He just said, I want something more like an animal, like in a cage. And I was like, oh, like a tiger, you know, like pacing up and down. And he was like, yeah.
And then as soon as the wall unfazes, clearing a path, they both leap into position, like just bam, right at it, snap on their sabers and fight. It's beautiful. Darth Maul allows you to have what honestly to me is a top five moment in all the Star Wars movies.
The epic three-way clash from The Phantom Menace there, an instant classic with fans and the highest-rated lightsaber battle in our countdown. But there are still eight more of Star Wars' greatest moments to come as our countdown continues after the break.
Will Smith.
Star Wars was definitely the movie that, you know, sparked my deep interest in films and deep interest in science fiction. There was something about the level, the extra level of creativity in a science fiction movie that just deeply sparked me.
End of part four. Part five.
Welcome back to Star Wars Greatest Moments, where we have reached number eight in our countdown. And now, it's time to take a trip to the dark side.
Number eight. In a scene from A New Hope, rebel soldiers shoot a door, out of which pour armed stormtroopers.
Whoa,
Well, the opening of Star Wars, you're plunged into the action, which is a very big, bold opening to any film anyway. You know, there's no quiet opening in Star Wars. You don't really know who's fighting who. They're just lasers going off.
And then in through a door walks Darth Vader. And it takes about 3 nanoseconds for the audience, wherever they are in the world, wherever they are in the universe, to understand who the bad guy is. And you imagine films today, how hard it is sometimes to work out what the hell is going on. Star Wars, like that, bringer, that's the bad guy.
While the original trilogy told the epic story of Luke Skywalker's journey from farm boy to Jedi Knight, the prequel trilogy, starting with The Phantom Menace in 1999, switched the perspective of the entire saga, reframing the audience's viewpoint to focus the sweep of all six movies on the rise, fall, and ultimate redemption of Anakin Skywalker.
It's interesting, told a lot about you as a kid if you wanted to be Han or Luke, but I kind of wanted to be Vader.
I'm a weirdo. I like movies where you end up loving the villain. I think that's my own sinister streak.
Like most things that scare kids, we're very curious about them and we want to see them. So I was Darth Vader for Halloween that October.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Vader loves choking people. He loves it. He loves it. Probably lies awake at night and thinks, ooh, who am I going to choke tomorrow? Awesome.
If I had that power, oh my God, I'd just be using it all the time. I would have used it at Starbucks this morning. They spelled my name wrong.
Oh, goodness.
It's D-A-M-O-N. Oh, you got it? Write it down. Yeah. And we're done.
The officer whom Vader has been remotely strangling keels over.
Apology accepted, Captain Nida.
Of course, famously, Star Wars was a youth certificate film. This was a film, you know, that had Disney level of certification. But actually, you get this beast, Darth Vader, being really, really nasty and horrible and violent all the way through from the start.
It is an absolutely brilliant look. It is the man in the Iron Mask. And inside this, you feel this sort of trapped human. You get a glimpse of it, don't you, early on, this terrible, semi-destroyed head. I assumed he was the most evil thing in the universe, but I didn't know that that, in fact, was me.
Luke goes to the apparently unfinished Death Star to confront Darth Vader, who he is convinced is secretly good.
Welcome, young Skywalker. I have been expecting you.
And finds the Emperor, and I don't think he had any idea of the Emperor's real malevolence before that moment.
Good. I can feel your anger. I am defenseless. Take your weapon. Strike me down with all of your hatred, and your journey towards the dark side will be complete.
I turned out to be even worse than Darth Vader, and I enjoy saying that.
The lightsaber battle between Luke and Vader at the end of Jedi is arguably the most poignant emotional confrontation of the entire saga. But while on the surface it seems like a battle between good and evil with the fate of the entire galaxy at stake, the genius of Jedi is that it's also an internal battle within the characters themselves.
It's not just villain fighting hero, it's father fighting son. Although evil must be destroyed and good ought to triumph, it's not that simple. All these things are going through their minds, and so they're going through our minds in the cinema. That makes for great drama.
You kind of get the Vader-Luke moment in Jedi. Which is awesome, you know, when he kind of, Vader turns good for that moment. No! He just picks him up and throws him. You're like, oh my gosh, he's turned good.
And it's our farewell to Anakin and Vader that makes the number 8 spot on our list, with balance restored to the Skywalker family and father and son facing one another for the very first time.
Luke, help me take this mask off.
But you'll die.
Nothing can stop that now. Just for once, let me look on you with my own eyes.
I think for me, it's the helmet coming off of Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi. It's an amazing analogy to how you see your parents. You see them as gods or horrible, scary gods, and then suddenly you grow up and you're like, oh, they're just a dude trying to figure it out as well.
Luke peels off the mask beneath the helmet, revealing the pale, egg-shaped head of his father.
You see something you're not expecting. He looks this kind of sad Humpty Dumpty figure who's bruised and he's bleeding and he looks so fragile, and you look at the blue eyes and you think, oh, he does look like Luke. They do look related. And he's suddenly not scary at all. He's sad.
No. Go, my son. Leave me.
No. You're coming with me. I'll not leave you here. I've got to save you.
You already have.
I think that is the essence of Star Wars. He's redeemed, and it's a reminder that there's good in everyone. That's a message and something optimistic that everyone can use a little bit of.
You were right about me. Tell your sister, you were right.
He dies, and the music that they play is this almost lullaby version of Darth Vader's march.
That's the first time I ever cried in a movie. And when you're 10 years old, crying is not cool. I just felt like this amazing wave of emotion, and I was suddenly caring about the death of this character that I kind of hated and feared 2 hours earlier. I think that kind of is the moment that really sums up my emotional attachment to Star Wars.
Number 7.
And we'll jump from the end of Episode 6 to the start of Episode 7 for our number 7 moment and the action sequence that brings together The Force Awakens' two key characters.
Rey is confronted by two devious individuals who attempt to steal her droid.
Rey starts the film alone. She's a scavenger on the desert planet Jakku. And she then meets Finn, and they go on a crazy adventure.
So this is the point where Finn is running away from his past and Rey is desperately trying to hold on to hers. Finn is in his saviour mode. He sees a sort of damsel in distress. He realises that there's some connection with him, and he keeps taking her hand.
What are you doing?
And what does she do?
Stop taking my hand!
She's so independent, she's so fierce, and I think that really set up her character. And then there's this brilliant moment where he falls down and she's in front of him, helping him up.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Follow me.
That's where you realise, actually, the roles aren't going to be like previous Star Wars films. This is a new Star Wars.
I mean, when we were in the desert, we were literally running from explosions. It was boiling hot, and the explosions can hurt you if you're close to them. So you were literally like, oh my God, I'm getting out of here.
We cannot run them!
We might! In that quad jumper!
Hey, we need a pilot!
We've got one!
And so then they're running, and you're thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen next?
What about that ship?
That was garbage! The garbage will do.
We turn around, we see actually that garbage is the Millennium Falcon.
It's just one of those kind of moments where it's just like, now you're talking, let's get on with it.
I ran up that ramp like a kid going into Six Flags.
Gun in position is down there.
I was there all the time. I set up tent in the Millennium Falcon. Had a great time.
Oh, I can do this. I can do this.
I can do this. I can do this.
The Falcon moment played huge in front of an audience full of people. I mean, it's definitely the big cheer that just fills up the theater. We revere the Falcon, obviously, because it's this icon. We grew up with it. To us, it's the best starship ever. But they kept it true to what the perception is in the galaxy. You can't get around the fact that the Falcon is quite a busted piece of machinery.
It's a hunk of junk. But the way it bobs and weaves and kind of gets in the tightest of gaps and kind of confuses the TIE fighters, everything was there. And with Rey as the pilot, it was kind of like, I can see how the origin story is going to stretch through now and passing. It was like passing on the baton.
The Millennium Falcon swoops and twists to evade chasing TIE fighters.
Are we really doing this?
I was quite young when The Phantom Menace came out, but I do remember watching the pod racing scenes with Anakin and being really blown away by that, and watching this Millennium Falcon kind of race through Jakku.
Oh no!
It kind of took me back to that. It took me back to being a child again and being so entranced.
Rey pulls several levers and the aircraft spins to face one of the enemy fighters, enabling Finn to blast it out of the air.
The Force Awakens really managed to get a handle on that and really make it as scary and tense and exciting as possible. Whoa!
Number 6.
While many in Hollywood saw the upcoming Star Wars as little more than popcorn fodder for children, George Lucas knew that he needed something special to raise expectations and give his space opera the gravitas it would require to find an audience. The solution came in the shape of his Obi-Wan Kenobi.
One day I got the word that George had cast Alec Guinness for Obi-Wan Kenobi, and I thought, hallelujah.
Hello there.
Was no longer a teenage movie. With that, he transcended the demographic.
Action. You must do what you feel is right, of course.
Nowhere in the Star Wars saga is the genuine class of Alec Guinness more apparent than in our number 6 moment.
Sure is leaving in a big hurry. If they identify us, we're in big trouble.
Not if I can help it. Chewie, jam its transmissions.
It would be as well to let it go. It's too far out of range.
Not for long.
The reveal of the Death Star, it's slightly mind-boggling, just the scale of that. Even a small moon is a pretty big object.
Look at him, he's heading for that small moon.
And Obi-Wan comments,
that's no moon. It's a space station.
That's no moon. That's a space station. That actually, this shirt I got from a designer in Barcelona. Now, you know, everything is a mashup now. Everything's a remix.
I have a very bad feeling about this.
The idea of a Death Star being the size of a planet was scary.
Turn the ship around.
Yeah, I think you're right. Full reverse. Chewie, lock in the auxiliary power.
It is inhuman. It is robotic. It feels like a representation of a star without its light.
Why are we still moving towards it?
We're caught in a tractor beam that's pulling us in.
There's gotta be something you can do.
There's nothing I can do about it, kid. I'm full power. I'm gonna have to shut down. They're not gonna get me without a fight.
It's chilling and dead, but rather beautifully designed.
It's so simple. It's a big orb.
The fact that they call it the Death Star, you wonder if the Empire has realized that they might not be on the right side of history.
You'd think that the PR department of the Empire would have come up with a better name than the Death Star.
You've got to commend their honesty, I guess, but maybe not their public relations.
That's no moon. Possibly the most awesome and awe-inspiring moment on our list, and it hasn't even made the top 5. To find out what has, join me after the break as we continue our countdown of Star Wars' greatest moments.
Back in those days, they didn't have multiplexes. It was just one movie theater at the mall, and you would wait online for an hour and a half or 2.5 hours to go see a movie. And so that was one of the few movies in that time that was like going to see a rock concert. And then it was just everything you dreamed it would be. So, you know, that whole era of the first three Star Wars was my childhood. And, you know, there was nothing more exciting.
End of part five. Part six.
Welcome back to our countdown of Star Wars' greatest moments as compiled by the fine folks at Sky Cinema. And we're about to delve into our top five. And starting with five, it's the inspiration for the shortest wedding vows in history.
Number five.
By the closing scenes of The Empire Strikes Back, audiences had spent almost two entire films watching the burgeoning will-they-won't-they relationship between a stately princess and a
stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
Who's scruffy-looking?
It's kind of pretty obvious, I think, early on that there's this incredible kind of chemistry spark between Leia and Han.
Come on. Come on.
You're imagining things.
Am I? Then why are you following me? Fredo's gonna leave without giving you a goodbye kiss?
I just assumed he's a Wookiee.
I can arrange that. And use a good kiss!
It's kind of like an old screwball comedy, you know? That's why it works so well, I think. This idea about characters who are attracted to each other and pretend they don't. It's like an old Cary Grant movie, you know?
Let go.
Shh.
Let go, please.
Don't get excited.
Very kind of fast-talking, wisecracking, very, very slow-building relationship.
Captain, being held by you isn't quite enough to get me excited.
Sorry, sweetheart. I haven't got time for anything else.
This energy just sort of builds up and you're just waiting for the explosion and the kiss.
Come on, admit it. Sometimes you think I'm all right.
Occasionally, maybe. When you aren't acting like a scoundrel.
Scoundrel? Scoundrel? I like the sound of that.
That moment in Empire Strikes Back where he's talking about being a scoundrel and she's talking about her liking nice men.
You like me because I'm a scoundrel. There aren't enough scoundrels in your life.
They're just arguing, they're getting closer and closer and closer.
I happen to like nice men.
Nice men.
It's just a great way to do a kiss. People fight, kiss. It's surprising, but you desire it. It's funny, it's interesting, it's romantic, it's all those great things.
Sir, I've isolated the reverse power flux coupling.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're perfectly welcome, sir.
As I went, pardon me, sir, I felt something go and I heard it hit the floor. A bit of my finger had come off. I swear, if you go frame by frame through that footage, you see a little bit of sparkle go down. But, of course, you don't notice it.
Harrison Ford had said that Han Solo's heroics at the end of A New Hope left little for the character to do, and even campaigned George Lucas to be killed off at the end of Empire. But at the start of 1979, as plans for The Empire Strikes Back began to take shape, Ford still wasn't 100% committed to returning for a third film. And so a compromise was reached where Han's fate wouldn't be decided at the end of Empire, leading to one of cinema's great cliffhangers and an all-time classic movie moment.
The audience were meant to understand that Han Solo was going to his fate. He was going to be frozen in carbonite.
What's going on, buddy?
Han Solo's being lowered into the carbonite pit. You know, he's going to be there test freezing him to see if the process works for when Luke shows up, and then they can carbon freeze Luke, take him to the Emperor. They take him over to the platform, he's loaded against the thing, gets to kiss Princess Leia right before he goes to drag him away. Come on, how awesome is that? John Williams' strings are rising, then dude's being pulled away. Here he's gonna be sacrificed. For all we know, this is the death of Han Solo. And coldest woman in space, you know, princess, not now, later, finds it in her heart
to call out,
I love you.
And, you know, and it's a movie, so naturally he should be like, I love you too, and then he gets dropped. But Han Solo is just so in control of exactly who he is, even in the face of death, that the last thing, for all he knows, he'll ever say in this life, he goes, I know. How awesome is that?
I love you.
I know. It was so spot on. It was so in character. It's what every guy wants to say when their girl says, like, I love you. You just, there's a part of you that wants to be Han Solo and go, I know.
It doesn't really do justice me saying it, but it's so, you know, such a thing that Han would say. It's so great.
For that to be the last thing he says right before he goes down in the carbon freeze, that's what makes that movie so great. And then you later learn that was improvised. There's nobody else who could pull that off except Harrison Ford.
There was a line there, and it wasn't bad.
Han was supposed to say, just remember that, because I'll be back. But Harrison Ford tweaked the line and just said,
I know.
That's exactly how Han Solo would respond. It's a perfect ad-lib.
I wanted him to stay in character, and I wanted the audience to have the pleasure of hearing something unexpected, but true.
While Empire ended with an uncertain fate for Han Solo, A New Hope climaxed with a far more definite demise.
Star Wars A New Hope builds to the great trench battle at the end, where the rebels have to go in and try and shoot one of their weapons into a tiny little exhaust port, which apparently is the secret to blowing this thing up.
They approach the Death Star.
Look at the size of that thing.
Cut the shot, R2.
Accelerate to attack speed.
That sequence where they go into the trenches, it's such amazing. I mean, the photography, the miniatures, the detail on the planet, you're finally getting to see what it looks like from the point of view of being in that fighter. They actually made you feel like you were in that X-Wing with Luke.
We're going in full throttle.
That'll keep those fighters off our back.
Right with you, boss.
Luke, at that speed, would you be able to pull out in time?
It'd be just like Beggar's Canyon back home.
They swoop into the trench.
The level of effects, the spectacle of that was so thrilling. It's a 3D movie without it actually being a 3D movie.
It just brings you closer and closer to the edge of your seat as you're watching it. I think a lot of times when you have films with giant spectacle, with giant battle scenes, like the trench scene, the filmmakers get really distracted with the mechanics of it. They get distracted by the lasers and the guns and the action. But that George Lucas knew enough to zoom in and show the beads of sweat on the men's faces, that's what sells it to me more than any of the actual action.
Fire, coming in, point three.
You're there. You're in that X-Wing with him. You can feel that tension. You can feel that excitement.
Obviously, as an audience, we think, yeah, he's going to do this. This is no problem. He's got all his computers. He's going to be fine.
Use the Force, Luke. Let go, Luke.
The Force is strong in this one.
Then he switches it off. He switches off the targeting computer.
Luke, you turned off your radar. Everything all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. You know, and everyone's sweating. Like, they got to get this one bullet in the hole. It's got to be direct hit. You know, and Vader's like,
I have you not.
All of a sudden, bam, Millennium Falcon shows up.
That kind of woohoo is kind of Han comes in.
You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing and go home.
Da-da-da.
We all hold our breath for a second.
The Death Star explodes, resembling a supernova.
Well, that's the end of the Death Star, but not the end of our countdown. There are still three more moments to go, including that all-important number one. So join me after this short break, when all will be revealed.
I think more than anything else, it's just fun. It looks great, it sounds great, the characters are charismatic, it's... You know, it's a fairy tale, and that's a genre that in any form always seems to strike a chord with audiences as far back as storytelling has existed.
End of part six. Part seven.
Here we go with the final part of our heroic journey to find the single greatest moment in Star Wars history. And at three, it's getting Hoth in here.
At number three.
After the scorching sands of the Tunisian desert, standing in for Tatooine in A New Hope, what better location to kick off Empire than Norway in the height of winter? And what better way to kick off the film itself than one of the most iconic battles in the entire saga?
It seemed very unusual at that time to have, like, the movie's biggest set piece at the start. So that made it kind of interesting that structurally it was going to be a very, very different kind of film.
That's what's so great about the Star Wars universe, is that any other movie would have set every battle in outer space. So rich and so imaginative. There hadn't been a science fiction movie that thought in that direction. You know, nobody went to Empire expecting it to start out at the Rebel base on Hoth.
You are just struck by these Imperial walkers the first time you see them.
All right, coming in.
There are these giant tanks built on these huge legs, and they are the most intimidating things.
The walkers were all done with traditional stop motion, and we were saved from the chatteringness of stop motion by the fact that they were lumbering, big, huge things. And if they looked a little bit chattering at times, you accepted it because they were machines.
It combines, you know, amazing spectacle, great special effects.
Good shot, Jensen!
And then over the top of that, you just have this incredible piece of music from John Williams.
One more pass.
Coming around, watch me.
Certainly as an audience member, I was just, like, totally engrossed. It's no wonder everybody jumped on that as, like, being really cool.
Number two.
The start of the Star Wars movies is so counterintuitive. We're used to sci-fi being a thing that happens in the future. It's going to happen to us in our future.
But I think that the most relevant thing is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It's actually presented more like a fairy tale, once upon a time.
And then just that trumpet blast.
The music certainly hits you, absolutely. And then the crawl comes up.
You know, it doesn't explain things, but it sets something up. You know, rebellion, civil war, two sides good and the Empire bad.
And then it comes down and there's a planet and, okay.
Then it just goes, small spaceship, huge spaceship.
And it comes. And it keeps coming. And it just gets bigger. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You're literally just like rocking back in your seat going, oh my God.
I remember it kind of almost ducking.
It made you look in the back of the theater and feel like this massive thing and that sound and the rumbling. It was so real.
And that was the instant thing, I think, and the power of it is you felt you were in it.
That opening shot was the most important visual effects shot in the movie. Because if we didn't capture the audience with that shot and set them back on their haunches, we'd fail.
The basic design, you know, is one ship here and then it comes over and sounds simple, but it really has so much power to it. I think it's in the simplicity of the thing that makes it work so well.
I saw it a few years later in a little art house cinema, which had the underground trains. Ran underneath the cinema, and every time a train went through, the whole cinema would, like, shake and rumble. And the timing was perfect for the opening shot. Just as the ship comes overhead, the entire cinema started shaking and rumbling because a train went underneath. And I was just like, wow, this is, like, some awesome, you know, 3D surround sound experience.
so the start of Star Wars brings us almost to the end of our countdown. We are literally just seconds away from revealing the greatest ever Star Wars moments. But before we do, just to ratchet up the tension a little bit more, here is what we've seen so far. At 20, while Luke and Leia are swinging to freedom, Vader is waiting to exhale at 19. The speeder bikes accelerate into the 18th spot, but it's not enough to catch Rey at 17. At 16, it's kicking off on Endor, while at 15, Luke has no father but a pair of sons. Han blows us all away at 14, but it's YOLO for Solo at 13. At 12, there's a wardrobe malfunction for Jabba the Hutt, with a case of Empire entrapment at 11. X-Wing marks the spot for Yoda at 10, and it's double trouble for the Jedi at 9. Number 8 sees Vader unmasked, with the Falcon in full flight at 7. That's no moon is the number 6 moment, followed by a fearful farewell at 5. There's trench warfare at 4. It's no time for heroics at 3. And our number 2 moment goes over everyone's heads. So here we are, almost at the end of our epic countdown to find Sky Cinema's greatest moment in Star Wars history. It all comes down to this. And wouldn't you just know it, after counting down 19 incredible moments, there's a twist right at the end.
The number 1 Star Wars greatest moment.
That is probably the defining moment of the Star Wars saga.
For me, it's the greatest moment in cinema.
It's such a brilliant idea, and it changes everything.
That's the key scene in the whole saga for me. That's the great moment of all time.
After 7 films that have captured our hearts, billions of dollars taken at the global box office, millions of fans in every corner of the globe, and 19 classic Star Wars moments, it's time to reveal Sky Cinema's greatest of them all.
A poster of The Empire Strikes Back.
We saw Empire Strikes Back on opening day. My father took me out of school. We said that I was sick. We sat in lawn chairs and lined up outside the theater and sat there for 5 hours and talked to everybody else in the line. And I remember somebody had a program, because back in those days, you could buy a program for Empire Strikes Back, and there were all these photos, and my dad was like, get that thing away from us. We don't want to know anything. We don't want to see anything.
Empire Strikes Back is an absolutely wonderful top 10 cinematic experience. This film. Star Wars is a movie. Empire Strikes Back is an absolute film. It's got more depth, way more character development going on. The performances are out of this world. The effects are better. It's more Shakespearean across the boards. And then it ends with, like, one of the most defining third act statements ever made in a film.
Luke Skywalker walks cautiously through the corridor of a spaceship.
Following on the heels of the most successful film of all time, The Empire Strikes Back not only met the expectations of fans, it exceeded them. But rather than the rousing finale of its predecessor, this darker movie demanded a more downbeat ending. And in the process, Empire provided a shattering twist that turned the entire saga on its head.
It is useless to resist. Don't let yourself be destroyed as Obi-Wan did.
His hand is lopped off.
That moment.
Don't make me destroy you.
And then he has this opportunity to kill Luke after cutting off his hand, and then he says,
if you only knew the power of the dark side.
And just that line, you know, Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him. No, I am your father.
What?
I just couldn't believe it. That left everybody in the audience dropping popcorn. It was anarchy in theaters.
No. No. It's not true. Impossible!
So I'm sitting in the theater, and that was just like,
Who knows what actually happens versus what our minds do in terms of memory, but in my memory, the entire audience gasping and a woman in the back yelling out, "No!" And then like a second later, Luke Skywalker did. No! No!
I am your father.
You're shouting at the screen yourself, watching that still. If you know what's happening.
It's still just as powerful today. That I am your father moment, even knowing it, even seeing it in pop culture, even knowing that it's coming, the way it was done, the way it was shot, the brilliant imagery.
Not only is it thrilling in the Star Wars saga, but it's a cinematic milestone, a hallmark in American filmmaking.
Join me, and together we can rule the galaxy as father and son.
As far as the origin, that's strictly George Lucas. And when he asked me to do Empire, the first thing he told me was Darth is Luke's father. And I was, that's fantastic. You know, I just thought it was the greatest idea ever.
It was one of those closely guarded secrets. I don't think even the actors fully knew the story. So that just shows you the lengths they went to keep this secret, which is fabulous because, you know, without that, the experience in the cinema would not have been what it was.
I have never been more emotionally manipulated and had a greater reaction to anything in my life, whether it's a book, a play, a musical, a film, than Luke, I Am Your Father.
Nobody sees that coming, man, and that could only happen before the internet exists. Could you imagine if Empire Strikes Back came out today?
There weren't such thing as internet spoilers, for a start, so I don't think anyone knew that was gonna happen.
I am your father.
M. Night Shyamalan built his whole career on the I am your father moment. He just does it cinematically. In the third act, something really weird and wonderful happens. You're like, holy crap, he does it with images. George Lucas managed to do it with one line, with a couple words. I am your father. Four words, man. I've been writing my whole life. I'm 45. I'll write until the day I die. Probably die with a pencil or, let's be honest, a laptop in my hands. I'll never write anything as powerful as those four words.
I am your father. That's the reaction that you want to have. That's Darth Vader in my stomach.
So there you have it. Those are Star Wars' greatest moments, for now, at least. But with the most exciting franchise in cinema history back on our screens, who knows what the future holds? And I, for one, can't wait to find out. I'll see you soon.
The end.